Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine. Tonight is Thursday, March 25th, and I'm your host, Josh Mitchell. So joining me tonight is Guy Kunzman, a fellow graduate student in the IPIB program. So Guy, a warm welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. As you said, I am a first-year graduate student in biochemistry here at UW-Madison, working in Jason Cantor's lab. I'm really excited for the show tonight.
That's awesome. You know, just to mention, Guy's a first-timer with me, so we're both going to struggle equally through this together, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what I like to hear. All right, tonight we got another great COVID update show. So we're going to talk about the latest and the greatest in the news. And what we're going to start with is a quick refresher on the COVID vaccines. Want to go in a little bit into the COVID variants. And then what I think we want to finish with is a little bit of a tough topic that I think it's time we start thinking about and dealing with, which is vaccine distribution and the ethics behind it. So without further ado, let's get started. So of course, let's get into a refresher about COVID vaccine, right? So I think an important thing we always want to mention when we talk about these vaccines is that we're always looking at a particular target on COVID, right? And which is the spike protein. Spike protein is the protein that's knocking on the door getting into your cells. So that's the important thing to remember when we talk about these. So Guy, currently we got three vaccines on the market in the US. What are those vaccines?
So first you have your RNA vaccines, which actually instruct your body to make just the spike protein of COVID, and that helps your body fight off the virus, as well as a classic viral antibody from Johnson & Johnson and Janssen, the triple J vaccine. And that uses an impaired vector adenovirus that actually presents a spike protein. So all three of these are actually targeting the spike protein that Josh mentioned. And they're all looking really positive in providing us immunity in the near future.
Yeah, they've been doing great. We've had excellent rollout. And one thing I want to mention with the triple J, as we're going to call it, right? The triple J. Triple J had actually some really a really unique diversity profile when it came to the actual like candidates that were given this vaccine. Did you know that, Guy?
I did not yet, but that's good to hear. Something I did hear about the trial was that it was actually done at the height of the pandemic when the U.S. had its highest number of cases. And so that actually brought down some of its clinical numbers to possibly a little bit lower than those RNA vaccine trials. But it's probably still as effective in preventing infections.
You know, that's actually really interesting. I was not aware of that because I knew that Johnson & Johnson, the triple J, was originally thought to not be as effective. So you learn something new every day.
It was just a little bit later than the RNA vaccines and ran into a couple roadblocks numbers-wise, but it's probably actually equally effective.
Yeah, the triple J actually has some of the best diversity when it comes to the actual, you know, human subjects that were included in the trial that was not only as representative of the U.S. population, but actually in some areas, the more underrepresented groups within the U.S. actually have much greater representation. One of those is Indigenous Americans, which in the U.S. population, I'm going to remember from the statistics, is typically considered less than 1%. In the triple J, pretty close to 10%. So it's pretty incredible, don't you think, Guy?
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's always good when you get that representation in the science to really back up how effective it can be across the board.
Yeah, especially because, you know, that way you can catch any variability you might find across different ethnic and cultural backgrounds as well. So I think it's wonderful to see good numbers with these vaccines.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's probably the most exciting vaccine at the moment.
Yeah. So what I also want to talk about too, though, is that we got some new non-US vaccines, or I should say, I mean, they're not US, but not available in the US is kind of a big part of it, right? So we've got, I'm going to talk about at least the big three. One that we're all familiar with, AstraZeneca, Oxford, right? So this is a virus that actually, if I remember correctly, it's a live virus, isn't it, Guy? I'm trying to remember. If I remember correctly, it's a live virus, but it's just that it can infect humans. Is that what you recall too?
Yeah, Yeah, I believe so. And that one also has that spike protein that we keep talking about on it, which will help our bodies fight off the actual coronavirus. But yeah, that one shouldn't be able to infect you at all, which is also comforting.
Well, isn't that, thank goodness for all of these, and that's the fun
Yes.
part when we get to CoronaVac, right? So that's one of the Chinese vaccines. But in the middle, right, we got Sputnik V, a Russian vaccine. And the Russian vaccine, so one of the big concerns with some of the Chinese and Russian vaccines, and luckily it's proved perfectly fine, was that they were approved and released to the public before a lot of the safety and efficacy data was approved. Luckily, that's all been worked out. Looks like safety and efficacy is great. And as a matter of fact, Sputnik V actually looks like it follows more or less the same principle that the Triple J does, where it's this viral vector that's basically it's missing a couple rungs on the ladder, so it can't actually, it can't actually do any damage, but presents the spike protein. In the Russian one, you get one ladder for your first dose, and you get a second ladder for your second dose. So it's supposed to, it follows the same style that we know with the Triple J. So in Sputnik, the numbers are looking great. So the Russians are onto something, which is always good to see.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear that vaccines from everywhere are doing well.
Yeah, that's I think one of the big parts too, is that honestly, all the vaccines have been doing really well that we've seen. Right, CoronaVac, which is the one of the Chinese vaccines. There's a number of them, but CoronaVac was one of the early ones. Is actually inactivated COVID virus, and so this is what you'd consider a little bit more of your traditional vaccine, kind of like with, the polio vaccine. There's an example of the polio vaccine that was inactivated, right, attenuated, that was given out, and that's how you would get, a lot of resistance. So, it's nice to see that traditional modalities work really well as well.
Yeah, definitely. With all these different vaccines, we're attacking from, the modern cutting edge RNA vaccines, but you can see that some of the old school traditional vaccines are also working just as well. So, good news all around on the vaccine front.
Yeah, and really when it comes down to it, vaccines that are being distributed in the US, we haven't seen any issues. Nothing
No.
that would ever be concerning. You see your normal vaccine related issues, maybe a little swelling, irritation at the vaccine site. You get some flu-like symptoms sometimes. So I love the fact that it's perfectly normal. As a matter of fact, it seems like the biggest problem that we've seen even globally is just that sometimes we're not 100% sure on some of the data. And I know with AstraZeneca just recently, they talked about the effectiveness was maybe down a couple of percentage points from what they reported. So overall, we're looking good.
Yeah,
So
I agree.
yeah, so this leads us into the fact that what we've been seeing in the news, something we need to talk about, of course, are these COVID variants. The new kids on the block. So where are we standing right now, Guy? How many variants do we have?
There's the three big ones that most people might have heard of. You have the South African variant and the UK variant, which are genetically very similar to each other. They might spread a little more rapidly or be a little bit more transmissible. But the important thing for those is that most likely the vaccines that you get for the original COVID variant are going to work just as well against these two variants. The one that might be a little bit concerning is the Brazil variant because it might affect how your body recognizes it once you are vaccinated. How do you feel about the Brazil variant, Josh?
I'm going to be interested to see what happens with the Brazil variant because currently, I mean, I think it's important to note when a lot of these variants were identified. The UK variant was realistically the earliest variant that we identified. That was December of 2020. So we're talking, maybe 4 months. And, for the South African variant and the Brazil variant, we're talking January of this year. So this is just a matter of, just a couple of months. And in science, while several months is pretty good time to work on things. To identify the effects of these variants in big populations, oh boy, we just don't have the data yet. But I think the part that's a little scary is that with this Brazil variant, the mutations are actually in a region of the spike protein, right? Our target where antibody recognition seems to be important. And
Yeah,
so,
that's the most
sorry, guy, take it
concerning
away.
part. That's the most concerning part for the Brazil variant, but another thing to remember is that your body is going to be attacking multiple parts of that spike protein. So maybe a little less effective. Maybe you transmit a little more even when you're vaccinated. But we really just need more time to see exactly how this plays out, especially among a vaccinated population. So as we vaccinate more people, we'll have even better data to see if this Brazil variant is as bad as it could be, or if it's a...
I'm hoping the Brazil variant, we don't see anything too problematic. So that's going to be my big hope.
Yeah, I think that's a best case scenario, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Now, right, so our COVID variants, those are concerning. But the nice part is the vaccine rollout, especially in the United States, has been going pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. And it keeps improving every week. I think we're at almost 2.5 million doses given each day, which is really phenomenal. It's outstanding. I think we're at 14% nationally. Is that right? That have both their doses?
Yeah. So full coverage, whether that's the triple J, right, the one dose, or whether it's two doses with our more traditional ones, right, for Pfizer and Moderna, 14%. We're talking, what is that, about 1 in 7? Yeah, about 1 in 7.
Yeah, it's really good, and it's only going to keep improving as we produce more vaccines and more people get their doses. So that's great. Particularly in Wisconsin, we are 13th overall in percent vaccinated, which is really good. We could do better, but it's really good. It's comforting that we're doing well here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we're pretty close, at least with full coverage and partial coverage to like the national average. So I mean, what can be said? I'm Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, definitely. Go Badgers.
That's all we could hope for. So it's good to see that in Wisconsin we're getting good numbers.
Yeah, definitely. So do you want to talk about who can actually get the vaccines right now?
Yeah, so this is starting to bring us to the ethics portion, right? So
sure.
Right now in Wisconsin, we've gotten to the point where we're past a lot of the first responders, medical personnel, essential workers, right? We're past the point, right? This is at least the check marks we're reaching. We're to the point where we've inoculating older Americans, right? More senior Americans, let's call them that. And now actually we're on to, I believe the most recent one was chronic conditions. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
So
yeah, those with medical conditions can now start getting their vaccines. So that's really good. Protecting those vulnerable populations is one of the most important parts of this whole pandemic when it started with social distancing, wearing your mask. A lot of that is to protect those vulnerable populations. So it's good to know they're getting their vaccines now.
Yeah, especially because there's a lot of complicating issues, right? We like to call comorbidities that are associated with a higher rate of ending up in a hospital. And, you know, one of those, a really interesting one actually, is asthma. And so here's a little in-depth science for everybody, is that individuals who have asthma have an increase in one of the receptors in their lungs. It just so happens the particular receptor, the ACE receptor, actually is what the spike protein recognizes. And so you see an incidence of people who have an increased amount, increases in, or, you know, people with asthma have a higher rate of hospitalization and complications with COVID. So getting to that part where we're talking about certain chronic conditions, excellent to see.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it. And those aren't the only populations that can get their vaccines now. It's opened up to more people. I know in higher education where I work, some people have been able to get their vaccines so far. And some states even have open vaccinations. So everyone's eligible if they want their vaccine to go get it. I think we're at least at 16 states now doing that.
So states that have open vaccination, there's actually, so the open vaccination is 16 years or older.
Oh, 16
right,
years
and right
older,
now,
not 16 states.
Yeah. Not 16 states, but close. If you subtract
close,
10,
yeah.
We're right at the number, 6.
6, but that's promising either way that, you know, the more states we have doing that.
So believe it or not, there are currently 6 states that have open vaccination for as long as you are 16 years 16 years old or older, and that is Alaska, Mississippi, West Virginia, Utah, Georgia, and Arizona. And that should be current. Now, saying that, if you look at states that are planning to open to what we're going to call 16 or older, the general public, most states have a plan in effect where they plan on being at open vaccination by early May. So there are, I think, less than a dozen states that do not plan on having open vaccination as of early May.
That's fantastic. And, you know, we just have to keep chugging out those vaccines, you know, the more we make, the closer we'll get to that. So,
I mean, can you believe that, though, Guy? I mean, a year, think of where we were a year ago, right? I mean, a year ago, we weren't even allowed in the lab, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you remember that first month when we were shut in home and terrified to go to the grocery store?
Oh yeah, that was a tough time. But you know, with these vaccines, we can see a brighter future right now. And yeah, it's just really promising as we make more and more vaccines that, you know, things will be a little more normal in the near future. So that's really heartening to know.
It is. We're doing really good. I think the one area globally, right? So this is where we get into a little bit of the ethics. One of the areas where we're struggling is global distribution. So I think an important number to note is that currently there's about 10 million doses that are being distributed every single day for COVID vaccinations. But a key part that we talked about earlier is that nearly a quarter of those doses, right, 2.5 million are actually being used in the U.S. every day, right? So a quarter of the global COVID vaccines are in the U.S., which, you know, I know that the U.S. is big. You know, we're over 300 million people, but, you know, I also know that we're not that close to 2 billion, right, which would be a little bit closer to, you know, a quarter of the, what you would think a quarter of the doses might be going towards, right?
And sure, yeah. And that's a trend you see globally as well. It's not just us. I think about 16% of the world's vaccine supply has gone to countries that only have 16% of the world's population. So there's definitely a disparity between the larger and maybe richer countries and taking too many vaccines.
Can you imagine that? 50% of the global COVID vaccines are spoken for by countries that represent 16% of the population. So you're talking about nearly three times as many vaccines per person in these countries. And what goes along with this, and a lot of this comes from the World Health Organization, right? The WHO, not the band, but the WHO, as I always think of it. I always think that's funny. You get into medical groups, science groups, and you get these fun acronyms that don't cross over too well. And so the WHO was talking about some of the issues where, you know, the U.S., we're looking that possibly by the end of 2021, we may have enough, you know, I don't like to say herd immunity, but we might have enough significant vaccination across the U.S. that we can go back to a more normal life that we used to know, right? Of course, always going to be changes, but something a little bit more normal. But what's kind of disturbing to think about is based upon inequalities in vaccine distribution, there are countries that wouldn't reach similar levels to where we'll be by the end of the year until 2023 at the earliest, right? So, I mean, Guy, can you imagine an additional 2 years of your life of being in a similar situation to where we are right now?
I think my answer to that is I would not like to imagine that. And so I think as the United States continues to roll out our vaccines and we start getting more and more of our population vaccinated and we perhaps have extra vaccines or we can predict that we will have extra vaccines that, you know, maybe start distributing those to other countries as safely as we can. I know with the RNA vaccines, that's a little bit harder. You need super deep freezers that go down to, you know, negative 80 degrees to keep those fresh. But that triple J vaccine, it can be refrigerated and it can even, you know, sit on the countertop for, I think, 6 hours and be safe to give to people. So that's something that's really promising, especially with it being one of the newer ones to be approved under the emergency use authorization that could really go towards many of these poorer or lower populated countries that aren't getting the vaccines right now.
And I think that's the big hope, because I think that is an issue that is tough to address, because you're right. Pfizer and Moderna require storage conditions that aren't always super amenable to low and medium income countries, right? Into certain developing world nations where you have concerns about more rural and isolated populations, where, you know, having a minus 20 or a minus 80 in, you know, in an area where you could get good distribution, it really becomes a very difficult problem. And so I think the development of things like the triple J, you know, if I remember, I think Sputnik also has better stability. And so I think it's the hope that some of these new vaccines and these new options, as we see better stability and easier transportation at things like room temperature or just refrigerated temperatures, is really where we're going to be able to see big moves. But I think, you know, wealthy countries, I think, overreacted. There's a great Nature article, and one of the things they talk about is how there were countries that were pre-ordering maybe a few too many doses for the population. So Guy, who do you think's number one on pre-ordering too many vaccines per population? Who do you think takes the top position?
Honestly, Josh, I wouldn't have any idea. I would guess the United States, but we actually struggled having enough doses for a while. So who was the culprit here?
Yeah, so this is the craziest part. I would have never thought, but Canada. Canada, when it came to pre-ordered vaccines for COVID-19, had roughly 8 doses per person.
And why would they need 8 doses per person? We know that the most doses you need is 2.
Yeah, I have no idea. But that just blows me away to think that we're over-ordering to that extent. I mean, yeah, okay, fine. It's nice to know you have, I guess, redundancy and backup. But that's also the major issue we're running into here, is that when wealthy countries start sopping up all the available vaccines with these pre-orders, the problem is the distribution services in place, you know, what the big one that's been established globally, which is called COVAX, they're not able to acquire any vaccines. And so COVAX is the COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access Plan. And so this is a global program which was designed to distribute vaccines essentially from the wealthiest nations into the developing world nation, with really its sole goal, which was a fantastic goal, is to supply doses to account for about 20% of people in low and medium income countries, which, what an awesome goal. But when you have wealthy countries like the US, the UK, and Canada, apparently, who are sopping up all these doses, you end up with our current status right now. So all right, Guy, here's a question for you. Of the 100 lowest income countries, how many do you think have administered a single dose of a COVID vaccine?
The 100 lowest income countries?
100 lowest income countries.
7.
Currently, by current status, as of this article, not a single dose has been administered in the 100 lowest income countries, as of the writing of the article.
That's crazy at this point. I'm going back to the Canada thing. They have a population almost 40 million. If they would have just ordered, you know, just what they needed, that could have been over 100 million more doses that could have gone to those countries.
I know. Is that not? And so that's the problem we're running into that we need to discuss with the ethics. And I mean, there's a lot with ethics with vaccines, right? But I think a huge topic we got to deal with are these, I think it's a fear factor. What do you think? I think it's a fear factor with wealthy countries. It's the fear of kind of the fluctuation of everyday living. And honestly, I can say I live with it. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a little bit of fear going into that. And you want to know you're backed up and safe, especially when it comes to vaccines. But yeah, you just have to supply for other countries as well. And we can't live in fear and hog the vaccines while the rest of the world, sorry, not the country, the world doesn't get it. That's insane that 100 countries haven't supplied one dose of any vaccine.
I know that one just sticks with me. So I think we got a long way to go with that. And I think we got one last thing we want to touch on real quick. This was a listener question that we had a while ago. And so it was talking about an article in which there's talk about using dogs to identify COVID positive people. And so when it comes down to it, the answer is yes, you can use dogs to identify COVID positive people. Is that not crazy or what?
That is crazy. And that would serve two uses. You could use them to sort of test, in quotes, if you will, in places where the tests aren't as widely available. And you could also use them in crowded places. So say the airport could have a COVID dog. And so you might have COVID dogs roaming the airport, sniffing out people who might be COVID positive in the near future.
Let me tell you what, the last thing you want is to have the COVID dog come to you in an airport. That's gonna be the big fear, right? When you get pulled aside and said, "All right, COVID line for you."
That might scare me a bit too much. I'm gonna keep wearing my mask and hope that doesn't happen.
I agree with you there. Well, hey, that's our show for tonight. So thank you, Guy, for joining me as my co-host on this evening's show of PNM. And also our thanks to our listeners. And a reminder that you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Perpetual Notion Machine. If you have any other questions about COVID or COVID vaccines, or want to tell us something and want to learn more about something we didn't discuss, shoot us a message or comment. And as always, a huge thank you to Charlie, our engineer.